It was half across the lawn, coming from the shadows, moving with such drifting ease that it was like a single solid cloud of black-gray smoke blown at him in silence. It made a single last leap into the air, coming down at Montag from a good 3 feet over his head, its spidered legs reaching, the procaine needle snapping out its single angry tooth. Montag caught it with a bloom of fire, a single wondrous blossom that curled in petals of yellow and blue and orange about the metal dog, clad it in a new covering as it slammed into Montag and threw him 10 feet back against the bole of a tree, taking the flame gun with him. He felt it scrabble and seize his leg and stab the needle in for a moment before the fire snapped the hound up in the air, burst its metal bones at the joints, and blew out its interior in a single flushing of red color like a skyrocket fastened to the street. Montag lay watching the dead alive thing fiddle the air and die. Even now, it seemed to want to get back at him and finish the injection which was now working through the flesh of his leg. He felt all the mingled relief and horror at having pulled back only in time to have just his knee slammed by the fender of a car hurtling by at 90 miles an hour. He was afraid to get up, afraid he might not be able to gain his feet at all with an anesthetized leg, a numbness in a numbness hollowed into a numbness. And now? The street empty, the house burnt like an ancient bit of stage scenery, the other homes dark, the hound here, Beatty there. The three other firemen, another place. And the salamander? He gazed at the immense engine. That would have to go, too. Well, he thought, let's see how badly off you are. On your feet now. Easy. Easy there. He stood, and he had only one leg. The other was like a chunk of burnt pine log he was carrying along as a penance for some obscure sin. When he put his weight on it, a shower of silver needles gushed up the length of the calf, and went off in the knee. He wept. Come on, come on. You can't stay here. A few house lights were going on again down the street, whether from the incidents just past or because of the abnormal silence following the fight. Montag did not know. He hobbled around the ruins, seizing at his bad leg when it lagged, talking and whimpering and shouting directions at it and cursing it and pleading with it to work for him now when it was vital. He heard a number of people crying out in the darkness and shouting. He reached the backyard and the alley. Beatty, he thought, you're not a problem now. You always said, don't face a problem, burn it. Well, now I've done both. Goodbye, Captain. And he stumbled along the alley in the dark. A shotgun blast went off in his leg every time he put it down, and he thought, you're a fool, a damn fool, an idiot, an awful idiot, and a fool, a damn fool. Look at the mess, and where's the mop? Look at the mess, and what do? Pride, damn it, and temper, and you've junked it all. At the very start, you vomit on everyone and on yourself. But everything at once, but everything one on top of another. Beatty, the women. Mildred, Clarice, everything. No excuse, though. No excuse. A fool. A damn fool. Go give yourself up. No. We'll save what we can. We'll do what there is left to do. If we have to burn, let's take a few more with us. Here. He remembered the books and turned back, just on the off chance. He found a few books where he had left them, near the garden fence. Mildred, God bless her, had missed a few. 4 books still lay hidden where he had put them. Voices were wailing in the night, and flash beams swirled about. Other salamanders were roaring, their engines far away, and police sirens were cutting their way across town with their sirens. Montag took the 4 remaining books and hopped, jolted, hopped his way down the alley, and suddenly fell, as if his head had been cut off, and only his body lay there. Something inside had jerked him to a halt and flopped him down. He lay where he had fallen and sobbed, his legs folded, his face pressed blindly to the gravel. Beatty wanted to die. In the middle of the crying, Montag knew it for the truth. Beatty had wanted to die. He had just stood there, not really trying to save himself, just stood there, joking, needling, thought Montag, and the thought was enough to stifle his sobbing and let him pause for air. How strange, strange to want to die so much, that you let a man walk around armed, and then instead of shutting up and staying alive, you go on yelling at people and making fun of them until you get them mad, And then, at a distance, running feet, Montag sat up. Let's get out of here. Come on, get up, get up. You just can't sit. But he was still crying, and that had to be finished. It was going away now. He hadn't wanted to kill anyone, not even Beatty. His flesh gripped him and shrank, as if it had been plunged in acid. He gagged. He saw Beatty, a torch, not moving, fluttering out on the grass. He bit at his knuckles. I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Oh, God, sorry. He tried to piece it all together, to go back to the normal pattern of life, a few short days ago before the sieve in the sand, Denham's dentifrice, moth voices, fireflies, the alarms and excursions. Too much for a few short days, too much indeed for a lifetime. Feet ran in the far end of the alley. Get up, he told himself. Damn it, get up, he said to the leg, and stood. The pains were spikes driven in the kneecap, and then only darning needles, and then only common ordinary safety pins. And after he had shagged along 50 more hops and jumps, filling his hand with slivers from the board fence, the prickling was like someone blowing a spray of scalding water on that leg. And the leg was at last his own leg again. He had been afraid that running might break the loose ankle, now sucking all the night into his open mouth and blowing it out pale, with all the blackness left heavily inside himself. He set out in a steady, jogging pace. He carried the books in his hands. He thought of Faber. Faber was back there in the steaming lump of tar that had no name or identity now. He had burnt Faber, too. He felt so suddenly shocked by this that he felt Faber was really dead, baked like a roach in that small green capsule shoved and lost in the pocket of a man who was now nothing but a frame skeleton strung with asphalt tendons.